This week, when I was driving home from, well, actually not driving home, I was driving back to the hotel from Chessington. It was an absolute bitch to get out of their car park, right? A nightmare.
Are you parked in there, did you?
Yeah, well, yeah. How else to get? There's nowhere. It's in the middle of nowhere, really. Well, it's not in the middle of nowhere. It's probably a bit extreme.
Parked in a Premarin directly next door.
What?
Because we have to be there.
What? In Chessington. Oh, right. Okay. Well, but how far is it walk then from there?
Five minutes or less.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we parked in there on basically the fields. And yeah, it's a bitch to get out of. I mean, it probably took us 45 minutes to get out because obviously everyone queues out. No one lets anyone out with the actual car parks onto the road because obviously everyone's just selfish bastards. So it's like one car filling at a time. It takes so fucking long. Anyway, while we were queuing out for that 45 minutes, I had some Garage Rewind track on. It was amazing. Loved it.
Garage is not my thing.
Garage, yeah. It's like back for the Artful Dodger. Doing it again and again. Get up, get up, get up, tell your friends. With a plan and a mixer.
You don't know the words.
No, I don't. I've forgotten. No, some absolute classics like Sambuca, obviously, yeah, Rewind, as in like the Craig David Artful Dodger one, not the one I was just doing. Yeah, really enjoyed it. Don't know why it just came into my head, but if you hadn't guessed, yes, I have spent last weekend away at Chessington and Legoland, which was much fun. Much, much fun. More for the kids, probably, than me. But...
Do you want to go? You want to go? It's now we know if the kid's been in full time school, then like you got to go in term time or after term time. You're like, ah,
yeah. Well, obviously, we just having the summer holidays and it was very busy, lots of queuing, annoyingly. But you know, I think because it is mostly, especially Legoland, mostly for kids, there isn't much there for adults really. It's a few kind of rides and a couple of things, but you kind of just accept that it is what it is. So the queue doesn't really bother you that much because you're not doing stuff for you anyway. So whether you're queuing or doing stuff for the kids, doesn't really matter. So, but Chessington was good. Although I found out that my boss he was there at their glamping site the few days before I went and come back with COVID. So that's nice.
AIDS.
COVID, not AIDS. Similar thing.
In work, we call it COVID. It's a mutation of COVID. It's COVID and AIDS together.
I'm absolutely sure that's not politically correct, but what would an episode be without something non-PC? Yes, we are.
Because our shift are known as how can I say, well, we've got an interesting WhatsApp group, let's put it that way. There's 6,000 images in there, so you can imagine those shift factory workers.
How is your phone not broken? 6,000 images.
Don't save them to my phone. Political correctness does never, ever enter the conversation at all, ever. Never.
No.
And then we basically said, everybody's so stinking on this shift that we've called it COVID and it can't beat any of us.
Well, apparently my boss is very ill. Well, actually, no. He was okay the first couple of days, but obviously knew something was up. Had very bad diarrhea. Had a test, come back positive. And then I think the following day, he said he was very ill, as in flu-like type stuff. But yeah, I haven't spoke to him since, so I don't know what he's been like. But apparently his 15-year-old son was in bed for 4 or 5 days straight. Really bad. So
flu, like proper flu.
I guess so, he didn't say, but I'm going to assume it's like, yeah, like proper flu type symptoms and nothing else. But I mean, my boss has been double jabbed as well. So obviously being double jabbed, still felt rough, still had horrendous diarrhea. So yeah.
It doesn't, for the average person who doesn't really look deeper into the science, it doesn't really give them much confidence in the jab, does it?
No, if you didn't look at, yeah, if you didn't look at the actual data and efficacy of it, you would think to yourself, well, that means the jabs don't work, so I'm not going to bother.
Yeah, because maybe you would have died. Well, I don't know.
But that, I mean, yeah, possibly. I mean, it could have been, maybe it'd been exactly the same. Maybe the fact that he's had a vaccination hasn't actually helped protect him too much. Maybe, like you said, he could have actually just been the fact that stopped him dying. Who knows? We won't know, because obviously you can't run a a randomized control trial of different variances or different outcomes, or see different outcomes based on two different probability or variabilities on things, because he's one person and he's had a jab. You can't take another Alan, his name's Alan, and obviously not give him a jab and then give him COVID and see if he dies. So we won't ever know.
Yeah, I had a conversation in work today, fine enough, but being that there's a boy who doesn't want it yet. I said, well,
The jab, I assume, not COVID.
Yeah.
Doesn't want COVID yet.
Doesn't want COVID yet, no. I said, no, it's up to you. I said, I don't care if you want it or you're not. It's your choice, and it's up to you how you feel. He said, it's not because I don't think it works, it's because this is his experience. She said, it's because I don't know long term. I said, right. And to me, that's, for someone who doesn't, it's logical. There's no long term data on this vaccine. 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. He's like, oh, well, who knows what's going to happen? I'm like, all right, whatever.
I'd be fair. And I think, you know, if we were to judge someone, I would say, look, I think that's an okay explanation as such, albeit I don't agree. I mean, mRNA vaccines themselves have obviously been around for a while, or technology, I should say, has been around for a while. So isn't that new, really? And that's the thing. So, and obviously they have been seen to be safe. I mean, yeah, you could say these specific vaccines, we don't have the long-term safety data. You can only get that over time. Okay. But I'll be honest, we do have the kind of the shorter to longer or medium-term data on getting COVID and how ill some people get. And I'll be honest, I'll take the vaccine.
I did say, he's not really, I think... Yeah, I think he would err on the side of conspiracy theorists, but he's not extreme. He's one of those, like, the government do this because this, and yeah, you're probably right, because the government are corrupt as fuck, innit?
Yeah.
So like, he would do shit like that, yeah, he probably would. Oh, they probably are backhand in a farm. I said, yeah, they probably are. We probably, well, question they are. Well, I can guarantee they are. But, you should know, isn't the rate of vaccine, what they call it, not death, but severe... reactions from the vaccine, isn't that much higher than the death of COVID? I said, no, if you look, because I happen to look at the Pfizer data, and like they've listed every single thing you can ever think of that people have had after the vaccine, but I imagine you couldn't directly, what's the word I'm looking for? You couldn't directly associate with it actually being the vaccine's fault. Anyway, there must be 300 to 400 now, different types of illnesses or conditions, and I said, you look at the bottom, it's like, you know, severe is like 0.0000 fucking whatever it was. It was obscenely low. It's like you got more chance to construct with lightning twice, probably. Not that I got data for that. And then I think the death was like 0.3%, is it? I don't know, something like that. So I said, well, really, you look at that, you're 100 times more likely to die of COVID than you are of having any serious issues with the vaccine.
I think half the problem is people think, well, I'm not going to get COVID and I'm not going to purposely give myself COVID, so why would I purposely give myself a vaccine? I kind of feel a little bit like, as much as I get the hesitancy by some people in that, you know, like, let's take the example of your mate saying, I'm a bit concerned about the long-term safety data, I don't know, so I'm kind of choosing not to have it. I kind of get that a little bit, but I don't agree with it. What I don't really get is, you want to be a decent human being. Maybe you don't, I don't know. But I want to be a decent human being. I kind of think it's the most responsible thing to do. But that's just me, I suppose. In the same way as like wearing a mask, you know, kind of figure like, look, it's no skin off my nose. It's not particularly pleasant sometimes, especially when you're a person that wears glasses. That is the most fucking annoying thing in the world. Because it basically means I have to take my glasses off whenever I wear a mask, because if not, my glasses become unusable anyway. So that is quite frustrating. But still, I kind of figure I'll just wear them anyway at the moment still while I need to, just because why wouldn't I? You know, even if it does, even if it needs a tiny little bit more protective for other people or myself, I'm just going with it. So
I just... I think a lot of people don't wear them as well is because they perceive the government as being corrupt, which they are. And then you're being told what to do by them who don't listen and don't do the things they tell you to do anyway.
So people there's definitely an element of rebellion, I think, in that it's kind of like, well, I'm not going to have my freedom taken away from me or controlled by central government. And I get why, because they are corrupt as fuck. Don't give two shits about individuals. and also pretty incompetent. I mean, I shared something today from UK politics Instagram.
In the fucking rooms, am I?
You are.
Was it Boris Johnson in his room? Something to do with the Afghani?
Yeah, well, there was Boris Johnson and Dominic Raab talking around, obviously the Afghanistan issues at the moment, and you just hear them speak where they are so far removed from, I guess, the actual situation themselves. I made a joke saying they might as well be with their feet up in fucking Barbados Beach, as in, like, they clearly just don't give two shits what's going on. It's just, and it just makes you think, like, I just don't get how people can view these individuals and think they are competent enough or give a shit enough about leading our country or countries. I know not yours, but being like major kind of senior figures in the global fucking world of politics. It's just like, oh my God, what the hell is going on? But
they're laughable, isn't it? They are laughable. I think, you know, you had Obama in the US, very professional, probably the most powerful man on earth. And then you got Putin, who was also very powerful, says it as it is, won't take any shit. They must be looking in the bars and thinking, you are a fucking idiot. You are an idiot. You were a bumbling little child.
Bumbling's obviously the best word for him. I'm just going to, just for your benefit, because the podcast listeners aren't going to be able to see this, but I mean, you can see obviously on my thing. You've only got to look at him. I mean, look at the state of him. He's got like a blonde. I know you shouldn't comment on someone's appearance as if to be like, that really did.
He doesn't look professional, as he looks like a mess.
No, I don't know. I mean, I guess you could say, well, you know, does a personal trainer have to look fit to be a good personal trainer? And absolutely not. And Boris Johnson doesn't have to look professional to be a good prime minister. The problem is, he's also a really shit prime minister, so it's an easy target to look unprofessional or to comment on his unprofessionalism. I mean, he's... Oh, are you the guys inundated with all the emails from everywhere in the world saying, please help my son, mother in Afghanistan? I've had a few of those. What the fucking planet are you on, Boris?
Like, it's nothing, is it? Like, you know, people are... You see these men not memes, but things on Facebook, and they could be just made up shit, can it? Like, you see, there's a Afghani little girl, I don't know, 3, 4, 5-ish, got a massive gash in her back there. Like, says she's been Taliban executed her family. This could be bollocks, mine, but you know, and they tried to kill her as well. They obviously somehow they shot her, but she didn't die. And there's a US Marine, mine. You know, sitting there cuddling us, thinking, fucking hell, that kid has lost all her family and someone tried to murder her, and you're behaving like a fucking prick. Like, that comment, or are you the people who get all the emails saying, help my family in Africa? I'm like, you haven't got a fucking clue. Like, we haven't got a clue what goes on over there. The Yanks haven't got a fucking clue. Most of Europe haven't got a clue. You know, nice. Someone said someone's going to come in your house and try and kill your daughter. You'd do anything possible, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. But it's like people saying, oh, we shouldn't be taking the immigrants. I'm like, hang the fucking boat now. Our country's full of fucking scumbags. Full of scumbags. How about we send them over to Afghanistan, get them killed off by the Taliban and bring in the kids? They're getting fucked off from over there. That's what we should be doing. All the scumbags who murder, rape, and all that fucking shit, they're all in prison. Send them over there.
We've got to find this. We've got to
prison,
find all...
prison system fucking sorted.
Well, we lots of issues in there, mate. But going back to the Raab thing, or the Johnson and Raab thing, like Raab's response apparently was, it's extraordinary. They all stayed after the Kabul airport attack. I'm like, do you realise they can't get out? That's the point. I mean,
they can't go EasyJet. Yeah, can you come and fly to Kabul and just come pick me up from Kabul airport? Just watching you land, because there might be a few rockets coming at you.
But anyway, sorry, listeners, for the rant about politics again, but it makes my blood boil that these fucking infants that are in charge of our countries are just so selfish and just incompetent. It just, honestly, I don't think much makes me madder. But anyway, Johnny, how's the elbow? Quick update. Not too long, quick.
Up until about 3 days ago, I was working in the gym, doing a bit of exercise. I spoke to a physio. I'm going to see Friday now.
You got a new job as a one-to-one PT?
Have I?
You said you're working in the gym.
Did I?
You said I was working in... I think you said that. You said that I was working in the gym.
I was working my arm in the gym to try and sort it
out. Oh, you're working out. You're working out, son.
You know. And it's like, oh, it's still quite tough to straighten up properly. And it was like, I was trying to force you all the time. And I was ending up... Because I was really... I don't know, picking things up, like holding my elbow back, picking things up the floor, so I'm using my wrist more. And it hurt my wrist as well. But then 3 days ago, I went from being really, I say really bad, say pain 7 or 10, to like 2 and more movement overnight. I'm like, I know that obviously the things progressed and maybe that's just the way it went. But
did you stop wanking?
No, I carried on.
Hmm. Oh, maybe you've just, you know, created some progressive overload in adaptations. Yeah.
But it's still weak, mind. If I try and hold someone in front of me and I bend my arm, it's still really weak. But I went to jiu-jitsu. What are you on?
Hold on. Do you do jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, funny enough, yeah, I
do. Yeah. You haven't told me before. We never spoke about it.
Not very good, but I do it. I went there, and there's only a few of us, like 10 of us. Done a few bits and bobs, a few finishes. Right then, half hour of fucking sparring, I was like, oh, God. I had a med, don't spar, because as much as you say, it's going to be, you know, we'll do a bit slower. It ends up not being that way.
Mm-hmm.
But in all fairness, I said, look, I don't mind going hard. Just do not try and armbar me. Or if you can help it, don't. And in all fairness to them, they didn't go near it. And there was a guy that was 115 kilos. And because I was nervous about standing up and trying to put people on a day, I'm like, I don't want to do it. So I kept pulling guard at him, and he's 115 kilos. He just sat at me and was fucked. And he's a rugby boy. Obviously trained a lot. He just clamped me in, and that was the end of it. It's like, oh, fuck's sake. But anyway, yeah. It's a lot better than it was. I'll see physio Friday now when we'll reassess him, I think.
Yeah, good. Nothing more annoying than having debilitating injuries, like in knees, elbows, well, any backs, anything, but it's so frustrating.
It's surprising. If you injure something which is relatively small, like an elbow,
penis.
It's exceptionally small. It's surprising how much, I know it's a stupid thing to say, but how much you use it every day, how much you rely on it. And it's like me, imagine having this all the time, or bust shoulders, bust elbows. So you take it for granted, didn't you? It's like anything. If you ever hurt your back, you're like, this is a fucking disaster. You can't do anything if you hurt your back.
Yeah. I had this conversation with a client about backs and just how easy it is to just, like, it's always something ridiculous. Like when someone hurts a back or does something to their back, it's usually something like reaching for the shampoo or sneezing or something like innocuous. Sometimes obviously it is, but it's like rarely is it something really bad where you're kind of lift, like deadlifting or doing something particularly strenuous. I don't know why that is really, but you know.
Funny enough, when I dislocated my shoulder, it was about 6 months after. I picked my sponge up in the shower and I ripped my labrum all the way around. But that's obviously because of the issue of the dislocation, and
that's
caused it. And then probably that's what it is, isn't it? You've done the damage elsewhere, but it's just the straw that broke the camel's back, isn't it?
Yeah, probably. But obviously you don't associate that, do you?
No.
And to be honest, often I think injuries in the gym are often, even though you can get obviously acute injuries that happen in the gym, clearly, you know, something you can suddenly feel go, I think a lot of the chronic damage is actually goes unnoticed, where over time you've kind of caused some more chronic damage, where it's just like you say, an incident then is the straw that makes it go.
Yeah.
I wanted to, because I don't think there's any more, nothing. I mean, there's not much more interesting to talk about in terms of me, other than just ate like an absolute child away. But I guess staying in a hotel for 4 nights, we basically lived on takeaways. So I think I had McDonald's, Domino's, a smokehouse takeaway. Like, I say a smokehouse, it was like in Chessington Park. There's like a smokehouse thing. So it was basically like a takeaway, like fries and I can't remember what it was, beef.
Crash and Chessington. Was the Gruffalo ride open?
Yes, it was. And it's very good.
It was closed when we were there. It was broken.
Oh no! Oh, devastating. It was actually the girls won it twice because I can't remember. I think the girls won it twice because myself, my father, and my brother-in-law went on. Oh, what's the big roller coaster at the front? I can't remember what it's called. Dragon something, is it?
Something. I don't know when I went out.
Yeah, basically a little spinny, like fast roller coaster, like spinny car thing. Quite good actually. Very smooth. A lot smoother and nicer than I thought it'd be. But anyway, we went on that while they went off as the park opened, because we thought we'd get on it while the queue was quite low, rather than obviously getting bigger during the day. Berenice one of their biggest attractions, and they went on the Gruffalo then. And then Summer loved it so much she wanted to take me back on later, so we went on again at the end of the day. So Summer went on the vampire ride, which was like Nemesis, effectively. If, like, for anyone that hasn't been to Chesney but has been to Holden Towers, like one of those inverted roller coasters with your feet dangle down. And I was like, she's going to fucking scream her head off at this. She absolutely loved it. My 9-year-old niece, however, cried the entire way around. She literally howled from the second it started to come out of the thing and go up to the fact the end of it stopped to get off. She just cried the entire way. Whereas Summer, I thought she was going to hate it and cry her eyes out. She didn't. She was just like screaming and shouting with excitement the entire way around. So I thought, I'm not sure I should bring her on this. I know she met height restrictions just to be supervised by an adult, but yeah, probably a bit extreme.
We went on, there was another little kiddies world where you've got you've got some steps and you go around the, like a little jungle gym type thing.
Oh yeah, so,
you know, yeah. There's a little, like, little boats in it. An air, but I went 8 times on the trot, one after another. I was like, oh my god,
Jesus Christ,
Dada again. I'm like, oh yeah, whatever.
Worst nightmare. They took me on one of the pirate ship thing, and I'll be honest, as I've got older, and I don't know why, but I used to love roller coasters and love all that stuff. I still like them, but there's some movements now that I'm just like, oh, this is going to make you feel sick as shit. And I must admit, the pirate ship, the entire round, I was like, my sister was laughing at me because I was like, I just need to look at one bit and I'm just going to focus on that one bit until it finishes, and that's it. Because all the time, like, I'm just getting motion sickness the entire way. So, and I honestly don't even know why that is, but I must admit, the last 10 years or so, certain things, some roller coasters or teacups or spinny things, just, whereas a child, never would affect me in the slightest. Now I'm a bit like, yeah, it do make me feel a bit like low blood pressure, dizziness type feelings, or like literally motion sickness, vomiting type feel. I wouldn't actually be sick. I don't think I ever will, but I must admit, because I can cope with it, but I'm like, oh, this is rough. Don't enjoy this.
I'm the same with things are spinning around. Around like, no, I can do roller coasters. Things
like, but I never had a problem when I was young. Like even 10 years ago, I never had a problem. It's only now. So I don't know if it's an age thing, or I don't know if it's another reason. But, and obviously, maybe great segue here into the topic today. But obviously, you do have to be careful around correlation and causation. In that, obviously, I figure it's an age thing because I'm getting older, and that maybe me getting older is making me not cope with things like roller coasters very well as I used to. In the same way, as you might think, as you get older, you know, you start to gain weight, and it's because you're getting older that you're gaining weight, you know.
Or is it because maybe you get a bit more tired and a bit more lazy and stop training and stop doing other things? Do you lose a bit of muscle mass?
Who knows? If only there was some research that recently came out that we could help us point us in the right direction.
But I think there is Brack, isn't it?
You know what? It's almost like I planned that, and I really didn't plan that segue. But hey ho, very good. Yes. So for anyone listening, still listening, there was some a paper released a few weeks ago by a guy we have mentioned before on the podcast, Herman Ponser, very notorious in the metabolism and energy expenditure realm of research, which, I'll be honest, I really enjoy, and I've been meaning to buy his book to kind of go through some of the stuff. I think it's called Burn. But he's also the guy I've referenced before around the paper called The Exercise Paradox, I think it's called, where he measured the energy expenditure of the Hadza tribe, which are hunter-gatherers, and his findings, and they measured them with doubly labored water, which will lead on to kind of the more recent study as well, while that's kind of an important point as well. But basically, the way they do it with double labeled water is they, for those that don't know, is people ingest water with some form of bound isotopes. I'm going to butcher this because I don't really understand it, other than they measure radioactive water. Oh, sorry, they ingest radioactive water, basically. And when it goes through the system, what they can do is then measure their urine to measure like the decoupling or the output of hydrogen and oxygen or something, and basically they can use that to make a pretty reliably accurate guess on the energy expenditure, which is quite cool, because obviously basically people can drink something, and then you can measure basically how many calories they burn, you know, which is obviously more accurate than a lot of other ways we can measure energy expenditure. Usually you get metabolic wall studies where obviously they have to kind of measure the gases in a room or whatever. They'd obviously get stuck in a ward. They're in there on their own all the time, and obviously they're measuring their kind of their gas expenditure, which they can then use to measure how many calories they're burning. That's obviously expensive, hard to do, can't do it for long periods of time, can't really trap someone in a small room for fucking 4 weeks, can you? So you might only get kind of 1 or 2 day studies, that type of thing, or not, or weeks maybe, not very long in there. Whereas doubly labelled water is obviously a lot easier because you can just give them the water and go off on their day and just make sure you collect their urine. So, but anyway, so he measured, he obviously did this thing with the Hadza tribe where he measured their energy outputs and came up with some data that showed that they didn't really have like much higher like BMRs or energy outputs than your general average Westerner, which is obviously, like, that's the reason what's called the energy, the exercise paradox, because you're kind of like, these hunter-gatherers, energy expenditure in terms of their exercise expenditure is huge because, you know, exactly as it describes, they are out hunting and gathering all the time. So you would think to yourself, well, if you were literally active all day, every day, you'd expect your energy expenditure to be huge compared to a Westerner that sits on their ass in office all day type scenario. Mad, isn't it, really? Yeah. So obviously, and that's a hot, we've said about, we'd love to talk about that in more detail. I guess that, like, one of those things is that even though we know all the data shows that there are only real kind of like hypotheses as to why that is. And I guess, like, we've talked about the constrained energy model a few times, and which is one of the hypotheses around your body's pretty smart or clever, that certainly over the longer term, for survival perspective, because obviously if you're a hunter-gatherer and you're expending loads of energy and you struggle to get energy in, as in you catch a fucking wildebeest or you find some honey or whatever, you know, they're usually consuming, you'd basically starve. If you kind of spend all the energy and you get no reward back, you'll end up starving and dying. So kind of having a mechanism where your body constrains the amount of energy you expend, and I guess by constrain it probably means like adapt or switch, because obviously we know there's different models or compartments of energy expenditure. Now, as an example, your BMR, so just staying alive, your exercise energy expenditure, so basically the calories you burn moving, exercise and that type of thing, your non-exercise activity, thermogenesis, so kind of the what we call your NEAT, so your fidgeting, I guess calories that are expended that aren't related to move or are related to movement but not specific to exercise. And then things like thermic effect of food, so the calories used, digestion, that sort of stuff. The idea is that the constrained energy model suggests that they adapt somehow. So if, like, your energy expenditure goes up from the exercise part, somehow the rest of your body adapts downwards somewhere else to basically not, you know, to constrain that a total energy expenditure somewhere, or at, you know, at a certain level to a certain point. So you basically don't just continue burn energy until you die because you can't, you know, like the hunter-gatherer scenario. For survival perspective, it's a good thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Your body becomes more efficient at doing certain things.
Doing stuff, yeah, probably, yeah, yeah. And I guess, like, obviously it is the theory hypothesis. We don't actually know, but it's kind of like the only thing that makes sense because, you know, if you're... I mean, you could just kind of bring out some really arbitrary examples of if you are running, I don't know, 10K, maybe you burn, depending upon your, you know, your fat mass, fat-free mass, fitness levels, basically, you know, you might burn 800,000 calories. I don't know, maybe that's big, you know, for a lot of people that might be extreme, but between 5 and say 8,000 calories, right? That's 500, 800 or 1,000, not 5 and 8,000. So yeah, and obviously you think if you're doing that multiple times a day or even walking that amount of times a day trying to find food, you think, well, okay, well, does that mean someone's doing 4,000 or 5,000 calories worth of exercise a day, so they'd have to consume that amount just to maintain their body weight? Well, if you do that over a long period of time, you're probably going to die of starvation at some point because you can't sustain the amount of calories because food availability is not as good in hunter-gatherer style lifestyles or times as it is now in the Western world. So yeah, so this idea of having this constrained, efficient energy model, whatever you want to call it, is a good thing to help you survive. So,
and surviving is quite important, I would imagine.
I would probably say it's the number one thing your genes and genetics are kind of built for, survival, yeah, and reproduction.
Yeah.
So it's probably going to...
When you start losing weight, you start getting hungrier and hungrier because your body's saying, hang on, but no, you're getting too small, but yeah, jam some food in your face.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, all that aside, the more recent paper and research came out is a... I don't know what you'd call it, actually. And I don't know, I haven't heard anyone else speak about it in a way what they've described what it is, but I guess it's a pooling of data across a large database of studies over a number of decades. So effectively what's happened is a load of people have got together and decided that we've got loads of data on doubly labelled water energy expenditure measurements. why don't we just all pull all this stuff together and see what we can kind of draw out of the conclusions? Which is obviously open access data is something that doesn't happen very often in science. I think people are very precious about their data, worried that people are going to either steal it or misrepresent it, or I don't know, whatever. Just basically, people are protective of it, so it doesn't really happen. But this is obviously something that's expensive to do, and perhaps a lot of people have decided actually there's a lot we could probably get if we just put all of these studies together, all this data together, and kind of draw some conclusions. So it's quite a cool study actually in doing it, and I think something that we obviously haven't got, and you can draw a lot of conclusions out of the data, I think. And obviously, you know, I'm going to be open about a lot of this is kind of like secondhand information in terms of, like, I obviously don't understand all the data. I haven't gone through all the data specifically myself. Obviously, I've read the study, I've read a couple of things and heard a few people talk about it. So, you know, full disclosure, these might not be my own specific views, but kind of just what I understand about it. And obviously, Johnny, you're the same, aren't you?
Yeah.
But I think one of the biggest things and the main things that kind of came out about it was this myth of, I'll say this myth, it's not really a myth. Well, okay, let's not spoil it. Basically, people's idea or feelings that as you get older, you kind of, you know, you start, your metabolism starts slowing down, and basically you start to put on weight because your metabolism is just getting shit, and, you know, you're not burning as many calories as you used to. And one thing this kind of, all this pooled data came out to show was that actually, from the ages of like 20 to 60, energy expenditure is actually pretty stable across the board. It doesn't seem to kind of slow down over time, which is quite a cool thing to be able to say to people. And I guess, like, not only just to like a ha ha, I told you you're not getting fat because you're just getting older. It's more of a case of, like, actually it should be quite practical that people now know, well, okay, well, if there's something I can do about it, as in I know it's not my age, and you can't obviously, unless you're Benjamin Button, reverse your age, there's another reason for it. How can I then tackle another reason to help me then? I guess obviously we can talk about that in a minute, but we'll maybe go through some other things around or some other points of the study, which is quite cool. Because let's say that, you know, these are all doubly labelled water studies, which are, you know, considered the gold standard or pretty accurate.
Yeah, really accurate, don't they? I'm not too sure the percentage of accuracy is, but they're up there, aren't they?
Yeah, I think, I mean, again, you know, without being a researcher and knowing about it, I guess it's kind of one of those things where I can't say for definite kind of the specifics about it. But sorry, she really put me off as well. But I think one thing, again, another point that was really interesting is this, when fat-free mass was accounted, or basically body composition. So let's say fat-free mass, so kind of like your lean body mass. When that was accounted for, actually males and females had similar energy expenditure. So again, another kind of idea that people seem to think females just burn less calories than men. Now, yes, that might be true, but that seemed to mainly be because females generally are smaller and not because there's any real genetic sex differences.
So the BMR would be different between the men and the women, and the actual physical activity expenditure is what would be similar, which is a bit different actually, because people think in general, obviously, like you said, is you think because men would burn more calories than women, which obviously that study there is suggesting that they do, but not totally. It's just BMR is what accounts for the difference in calorie burn, but actually exercise expenditure is similar or the same.
Yeah, well, I think just what you can definitely seem to kind of draw from it is that, like, once you account for the size of an individual and their fat-free mass, like, energy expenditures seem to be quite stable across the board. And obviously there is inter-individual differences, as in, like, it doesn't mean that if everyone's 60 kilos of fat-free mass that you're all going to have the same energy expenditure, because obviously that's not true. There are definitely variances between people, but what it does show is that you're not just kind of, the variances between individuals are a lot smaller, and the other compartments or other counterparts of it are what are perhaps causing the individual differences between people, like energy expenditure, like exercise energy expenditure, or slight variances in genetics and genes and that type of stuff. As in, like, you know, 250 kilo or 50 kilo lean body mass individuals, as in they've got 50 kilos of lean mass, one might be 1500 calories, one might be 2000 calories type thing. So there is going to be individual differences between the two, but the trend over the kind of the brackets of once you account for lean body mass still does show that there is a kind of sliding scale of that. The more lean body mass you have, the higher your energy expenditure as such. Up till obviously between, so the, and the age isn't the variance, or the sex isn't the variance that makes a difference. If that makes sense, I don't know if I explained that very well, but
yeah, I understand. It's been up pretty well, I think.
But it's interesting. I mean, again, it kind of shows you again. Like, oh, you know, people say about it's a bit, you know, poor females. They don't tend to be able to eat as much as men. And yes, okay, that is true. But it is based on the fact that men tend to be bigger. So you know, unless you can't change your bone structures and your height. I know that. But obviously, if you want to obviously build more body weight, more lean muscle, then you can do that as a woman and increase your energy expenditure. I guess obviously that's the kind of like one of the take homes around the study and the interest of it, in terms of like you shouldn't feel powerless in that, oh, it's my age or it's my sex, because actually it kind of shows really that this isn't really age or sex. I mean, up to the point, I think I said when we were chatting about it before, didn't I, that once they hit 60, there did tend to be a bit of a drop in energy expenditure over time. Like, I can't remember what it was now, the actual figures, but like a small percentage per year, you know, like less than 1% over a year. But I guess the cumulative effect of that from 60, 61, 60, you know, not that happens. You know, you don't hit 60 and it just immediately happens, you know what I mean? Once you start getting over that end, the trend did start to go down. Then, yeah, I guess that it does show that they do start to decrease. But although an interesting point, and I heard Greg and Eric point this out on their podcast on Stronger by Science, that the even though beyond 60, the energy expenditure did drop down, and even though fat-free mass also tended to drop, as we know, you know, kind of get older, you start to see signs of sarcopenia and obviously reductions in lean body mass. The data didn't actually show that the fat-free mass went up as well. So you kind of, and the point there is what I mean, is that I guess a lot of people would say like, oh, I'm getting less muscle mass, my energy expenditure is going down, therefore it's going to cause me to gain weight. Actually, they didn't really gain weight. They didn't see that their fat-free mass went up across the board.
Okay.
So there's obviously like, it's not, it kind of suggests that their energy intake is decreasing in line with their energy expenditure as you get that age as well, as in like there's a bit of a natural mechanism that as you get a bit less muscle mass or less lean mass and perhaps your energy expenditure drops, the amount you eat also drops in line with it to basically stop you gaining loads of weight. Now obviously, you know, again, we're talking across the generic board here, we're not talking individuals, but that's interesting as well. I don't know what you take home from that, other than, you know, because I suppose like you can think about it logically, perhaps as people get older, their appetites just start, like we know, like a lot of people when they get older, their appetites aren't as good. They don't eat as much, they don't drink as much. And obviously a lot of elderly people are at risk of losing weight as they kind of reach older years rather than gaining weight potentially.
My grandpa, who was 100, has probably been the same ish weight for the last 30 years, I would imagine. Since I've been born, he's been that small. And is that he spends, right, £12 a week on shopping. £12.
Cure.
So he doesn't eat a lot, but obviously doesn't move a lot as much anymore.
Mm.
Obviously, 101, you know, next year. But like you said earlier, it was less than 1% a year. So from 60 to 100 year old, all right, a 40% drop in, was it energy expenditure?
Yeah. And to be fair, that might not even be that, because obviously there might be a ceiling to how much it actually drops. You know, it might not be a straight linear 1% a year. That might be 1%, 0.5%. You know, that bit to a point where it just tapers off, but we don't know.
Even if it's 40%, it's like, all right, it's 40%, but to be fair, you're not going to be moving as much when you're 100 years old. So you don't, like you said, you're just not craving food that much. Your appetite is just not the same anymore. So yeah. I think it's a lot of old. My parents don't tend to eat, you know, that much compared to what they used to.
No, well, as you age, a lot of people as well find it more difficult to eat certain foods or specific foods or eat as much. And I guess, like, you know, the reduction in appetite, which we know happens in a lot of elderly people, it kind of makes sense, really. I guess that kind of supports this idea of why people, you know, as you get older, though, the data, even though showing this reduction in fat-free mass and energy expenditure, doesn't seem to suggest that the fat-free mass also went up. Sorry, the fat mass went up.
Mm. Do you think after 60 as well, I don't know if this ties into it, I think, but maybe people that, obviously when you're 60, are more at risk of getting health issues in you after 60. And people have gone, you know, maybe they're at the age and they've got grandkids and they've gone before, we're like, ah, fuck it, I'll eat whatever. And God, you've got grandkids now. You told, well, you're a bit of a dodgy ticker. You better sort your diet out. Do you think that sort of stuff plays into people maybe eating a bit less as they get older as well?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Perhaps, yeah, I haven't really thought about it. I guess, I mean, I don't know if that's quite individualised, whether I would say it completely extrapolates. But then again, I suppose is, I was going to say the reduction in appetite or struggling to eat is another thing. But yeah, I don't know. Perhaps, yeah. Yeah, perhaps. I mean, I guess obviously not everyone's going to have kids though, or no, or grandkids, I should say, and whatever else. But I mean, just going back to the whole point about it, I think, and the take home here is the kind of myth busting idea of that it isn't because you're getting older, it's because you, like Johnny, like you said, you're getting a bit lazier, you're not moving as much, and yeah, that's probably the reason why if you are gaining weight, that's why, not because of the fact that you're old and your metabolism is broken or breaking or slowing down.
That's probably one of those things that, oh well, I'm whatever now, 50, whatever. What's the point now? I said, no, I'm done. I'll do what I want. So, and have the excuse of, well, I'm older and my metabolism slowed down anyway. It's an excuse to do it. I think like all people, if there's an excuse to not do something, a lot of people won't, especially if it's difficult. It's like, oh yeah, well, you can't do anything about it, your metabolism. Oh, I won't bother. I won't even try. Do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, well, like the age thing, and again, another thing Greg and Eric pointed out on their podcast, which again I wouldn't have necessarily seen or known about, but there was some potential explanation for the decrease in energy expenditure in people above 60. That would be over and above what being accounted for in terms of their lean body mass. So when they accounted for their fat-free mass and lean body mass, there was still a smaller reduction a reduction in energy expenditure, even accounting for it. And they said that actually might be, and again, hypothesized, but to do with organ tissues and the metabolic rates or energy use of specific organs might be one of the explanations. And that, I think Eric referenced one study, which I don't know if I've got it now, actually. I think I might have had it. Yeah, go Zimian Wang, 2010. Yep, 2010. Specific metabolic rates of major organs and tissues across adulthood, evaluation by mechanistic model of resting energy expenditure. But basically, albeit the amounts are actually very small, over time, people's organs use less energy. And I don't know why that is, whether people's organs get smaller, which might, I kind of figured, like, you know, some organs, like your heart, will change in size depending upon your fitness levels and stuff like that. Perhaps your brain becomes less active. I don't know. I'm just making shit up here, aren't I? But they did see, like, even though it's only, I don't know, rough, I can't remember what the numbers were now, but like 10 calories per organ, maybe, when you're kind of getting into older age. You think about if that's added up to all organs, you know, that could be a reasonable drop in energy expenditure, because obviously 10 calories per organ over your heart, your lungs, your liver, your kidneys, whatever, all of a sudden that kind of all adds up to a reasonable amount of reduction in energy, total energy expenditure, perhaps. And I guess there's not really a lot you can do about that, unless you want to start taking a fuckload of growth hormone and other drugs to try and improve the size of those things or how hard they work. I don't know. That's assuming that's the reason why they drop an energy expenditure. Again, like I said, I am making this shit up as we go along here. But just an interesting point, I thought.
I wonder how many people would actually start jamming growth hormone into them just to try.
Just to try and think, oh, I'm going to stop my energy expenditure slowing down when I'm older. I'm going to start jabbing a load of stuff into me. Someone will, no doubt, but probably probably the same people that will end up dying of DMP or fucking other stuff that they're just shoving inside of them. So,
if anyone doesn't know what DMP is, it's the most horrific fat loss drug you can ever take. It's not a case of, you know, take one, oh, it's not quite that good, take two, it's okay. It's not, take two, die. Burn from the inside out.
Yeah, I don't understand exactly what DMP does, other than a very simple level of it kind of somehow increases mitochondrial activity and kind of basically little energy burners that just kind of overwork and overheat. And obviously that's where a lot of the fat burning effects come from, this kind of absolutely increase in energy expenditure through that. Obviously, what Johnny, as I said, Johnny's a point that happens. Some people then just overheat and die, like to a point where like even doctors can't save you. I mean, there's people that have taken them, gone to hospital, and been told by doctors, nothing we can do. We can't cool your body down enough now to stop you dying. So it's just waiting it out until you die, basically, which is fucking horrific.
I think you've got to be fairly. People are, I think, the fat loss pill is fairly stupid. They just think, oh, take whatever. So you don't know what's in it.
Well,
no fat pill is legal, works.
That's exactly what I was about to say. Like, fat, when it comes to fat burners, we kind of said before, haven't we, that it's kind of, they don't work, or if they do work, they're probably really fucking dangerous. And that's basically what it comes down to, the two options of, they either don't work and do fuck all, or if you take them, there's a good chance you might die. So,
and DNA works.
It does work, but you might die. So,
I did remember, I did see the story of how it was developed. They were, I think they were developing TNT or dynamite or something like something. But when they were making it, people were losing weight and dying. And then they found this compound. They go, oh, we'll just fucking put on a pill. Yeah, don't ever take that.
I was just finding some statistics on it in that. Sounds horrendous.
But
yeah.
For life.
Let me read this. So first page come up is I don't know what, if this is a legitimate website or not, but commonsciencespace.com, and the article is called How DMP Kills. And there's this little case that it stops, says a death in Minnesota. A young man arrived in the emergency room in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in acute distress with a fever, rapid deep breathing, and a racing heart. As reported in 2018, doctors couldn't initially identify the cause of his problem. His breath had twice the normal level of carbon dioxide, and that level kept going up. His fever also kept increasing despite the doctor's frantic efforts to stabilize him. 45 minutes after mission, the muscle's body violently seized up rigor mortis, but in a body not yet dead. The rigidity was so hard, the tube the doctor inserted in his trachea to help him breathe was clamped off, and no amount of physical effort could unblock it. 50 minutes after that, the CO2 in his breath reached three times normal. All attempts to save him failed, and 90 minutes after the young man reached the hospital, he had died. That sounds absolutely fucking tragic and horrendous. So yeah, apparently it's taken 12 hours before DMP, so dinitrophenol, I don't even know how to pronounce that, to be honest. I've never known it's DMP, obviously, which you purchased from a website. Yeah, and it was used in munitions, I don't know, why is that so difficult to say? Munitions manufacturing in World War I, and then as a pesticide, a dye, and wood preserve. But yeah, it was marked as DMP led to rapid weight loss for a few years after it was marketed as safe over-the-counter weight loss drugs. Fucking honestly.
Since 2007 up until 2018, there has been a total of 26 deaths.
Yeah, this says here that between 2012 and 2018 there were 23 deaths in England alone.
Yeah, well, from 2000 to 2012 there was 4. I don't know where this is. It's a .com, maybe it's US, I don't know, but no, because it's 4, and then it jumped, you know, it adds in 22 over the next couple of years, so it shows it's getting more prevalent and people are looking for it more. It's this stuff, you know, if you have to really understand what you're doing to even try this and understand that, you know, more is not better, you will die.
Yeah,
these symptoms occur because DMP works by uncoupling oxidative phosphorylation in mitochondria. Energy is therefore released as heat, which means that adenosine triphosphate ATP, which provides energy for cell processes, is not made, explains Philip Strange, professor of pharmacology in the University of Reading. In principle, a little DMP might cause loss of body mass as the body breaks down fat to compensate for the lack of ATP. Observing the unintended weight loss among factory workers led to further studies, and by the early 1930s, it was touted as a magic bullet for weight loss. According to Strange, by 1934, around 20 wholesale drug firms were marketing DMP, and as many as 100,000 people were taken in the United States alone in 1934. At this point, it was still legal. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. But basically, kids, don't risk it. Not worth it.
Yeah. No, it's not.
Absolutely not worth it. But anyway, so we obviously went off a slight tangent there, but interesting nonetheless, I hope, for people. But I think we've probably gone over the study now. I think it's probably enough. Hopefully people found it interesting. I don't know if you've got any more take-homes or observations from it, Johnny, our boy.
Try and stay as muscular and less fat as you can.
Well, maybe not even less fat. I guess like some fat is fine. Obviously, there are... And the reason I say as less fat, because I guess, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with putting on a bit of timber as you get older, because obviously priorities in life change, you do become a bit less active and all that shit. And as long as you're in a healthy range, no one gives a shit, let's be honest. So whatever. I'm not suggesting anyone goes and purposefully becomes obese to increase their energy expenditure, because it kind of defeats the point and perhaps a bit counterproductive given we're talking about health here. But yeah, I think absolutely the take home here is, you know, try and manage your lean body mass, because that seems to be the biggest predictor of your energy expenditure. But energy expenditure is still only one side of the kind of the equation. The body mass, not body mass, the kind of body, what word am I looking for? I can't think the right word, homeostasis, but I can't think of the right phrase I'm trying to look at. It's only one side of the energy expenditure equation. No, energy balance equation. Fucking hell, Jesus Christ. So yes, I guess like there is also an element of, we probably don't need to worry too much about controlling, you know, or doing every little influence to or thing to influence our energy expenditure, when we should also be looking at our nutritional considerations and interventions to make sure that we just don't overeat in the first place as well.
Try and maintain a decent level of body mass for as long as you can, you know, without doing things that compromise your health. Like if you jam in 4 grams of test to maintain that, you might, may probably has a detrimental effect on your health.
That might be, yeah. So that might be the extreme intervention to make, obviously taking a shit ton of drugs. But I mean, there is a reason for that, not just the energy expenditure equation, but the fact that being more muscular, better bone density, this sort of stuff probably helps with lots of activities of daily living and kind of general healthy things to do when you're a bit older. Like if you fall over, less likely to break a hip. That's a pretty good idea, I think. I think most people are pretty happy with kind of being less risky to breaking things, and, you know, being able to get out of your chair a bit easier and comfortable, or playing with the kids in the garden. I think they're all things that people would like to be able to do. So,
yeah. Do you think maintaining a decent level of muscle mass may stop you getting your hip smashed and broken in jiu-jitsu?
Probably. I think it'll help lower the risk of it happening. I mean, it may not prevent it, because let's be honest, you know, shit happens. I think doing something like jiu-jitsu, unfortunately, with other killers, I think you're always going to get something broken at some point or injured at some point. I do think it's inevitability of such or sorts, but, you know, I think we have to take some risks in life, Jonathan, to improve or to kind of get some form of reward.
I did listen to someone the other day, and it was a guy called Chujitsu, funny enough. His nickname's Chewy. Chujitsu.
Chujitsu.
And then someone was asking him, is not Jujitsu in general, but are combat sports worth it, knowing you will get an injury at some point? Not if, but when. If you do it multiple times a week, you know, across years. He said, well, when you're with 70 and 80 anyway, you're going to be fucked anyway. In some matter, you're not going to be, you know, your knee's going to be hurting, something's going to be hurting. You may as well do some new love and be in the same place in reality anyway.
I still think there's a net benefit regardless of injuries and stuff. So right. I mean, unless you know, snap a spinal cord and you're paralysed for life. But
what's the chances of that, on it?
Yeah, I know. But what you talk about jiu-jitsu, it just reminded me of a podcast I was listening to with Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, the ex... Oh, no, he's still fighting, actually. MMA fighter, I think he's still fighting. You what?
38, is he? 38,
yeah, about 38, 37, something like that. He was talking about how someone he used to train with back in the day, his name was literally Muay Thai. That made me laugh. I was like, it's his name, Muay Thai.
He must be a beast.
Yeah. I don't know. Steve Wonderboy is a beast, as in, like, he's not a big muscular beast, but obviously he's like over 6 foot, like 6'2" or something, and just fucking such a, he's unique as well in terms of like very karate based style, isn't he? But I do like him, and he seems like a really nice guy as well. Really nice dude.
which is a bit, and he does his own YouTube channel, doesn't he? And he seems like a nice bloke.
Yeah,
he's a nice bloke, but he will absolutely take your head off if you ever need to.
Yeah, of course he would. Of course he would. Like fucking kicking is lethal. Absolutely lethal. Like obviously again because having a karate kickboxing background. But yeah. On another note, it is Jake Paul, one of the Paul brothers, and Tyrone Woodley's fight tonight, isn't it?
Yeah. The thing is, again, Jake Paul is fighting he's not fighting a boxer. You're fighting Mayweather, yeah. Mayweather's 40-odd years old and just taking a fucking piss. You know, yeah. Mayweather's known. He does knock people out.
Yeah, but it's the other one, isn't it? It's not even him. So I don't know which one's which. Yeah, I think it's Logan. But I don't know. Basically, I don't know which one's which. But it's the one who fought Mayweather is not the person fighting. It's the other brother fighting Tyrone Woodley.
I thought it was the same guy.
No, I don't think so. Unless I've got that completely wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's not wrong.
The thing was MMA, it's a different... It's different, isn't it? They don't stand in front of you. Just,
no, but what I would say is obviously, like, obviously the previous fight he had was against... what's his face? Oh, what? I'm a fucking terrible mind tonight, Jonathan. Honestly.
Is it him?
Who?
KSI, the YouTuber?
No, that was the first one, wasn't it? It's fucking ages ago. Jorge Masvidal knocked him out with a knee and then he's basically retired since. And I can't think of his name. Why can't I think of his name? Come on. This is ridiculous, Jonathan.
The wrestler,
yes.
Guy who can't punch.
Yes. Yes. This is ridiculous. I can't think of it. Right, Ben Askren. Fuck me, I had to Google it. Sorry, listeners. Got that bad, I had to Google it. Ben Askren. Obviously, Ben, Olympic, like, standard, probably gold medalist, actually. I can't remember if he did get gold. Basically, like, high-level wrestler. Decent MMA fighter because of his wrestling background. He is not a fucking boxer. He also had a hip replacement recently, and he's never been in the best of shapes as such in terms of being like athletic shape, but he's obviously strong as a motherfucker because of the wrestling background. But when you've watched the fight with this Paul brother, he looked even more out of shape, and obviously, like I said, recently having a hip replacement, probably not in the best condition of his life. You could probably be pretty sure about that. He obviously can't box. Easy fight. Tyrone Woodley, however, is a whole different kettle of fish, mate, in that, you know, he's like 40, don't get me wrong, but he's still in phenomenal shape. Like, he doesn't look 40. He's still athletic, as muscular as fuck. Very strong.
Is that good, or is it?
You are?
Do you think his gas tank's that good?
No, and I guess there is an element of MMA, like, you know, 4-ounce gloves, couple of punches and he's done, so he doesn't need to, you know, constant boxing rounds like you would do in boxing. But still, I think Woodley's going to be a whole different kind of boxing standard compared to someone like Ben Askren. So I'm hoping he gets his fucking head knocked off him, because I don't like the Paul brothers. I can appreciate that there's probably a massive facade in characters they've now built, which have got them rich as fuck, and you can't help but be impressed by that. Like, the amount of money they've now made and kind of how popular they are is like impressive from a business perspective. But they do have the most punchable faces, certainly the younger one as well. They're so irritating. But
one called out Daniel Cormier.
Just, yeah.
Well, and he said, "You don't have the right for me to fight you," because he's what's light heavyweight Daniel Cormier, isn't he? It's like, you know, but and it's like, if you want to fight, you stand in a cage with Daniel Cormier, he will eat you alive within 30 seconds if he wanted to, because he plays wrong with Habib, and Habib's a fucking killer, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he plays with him training because he's obviously a lot bigger, isn't he?
Mm.
Like, and which one said he could? He think he'd have a chance against Mike Tyson, even now.
It's got to be the older one who's kind of, because I think the older one, obviously being a bit bigger, and I think he's got more of a boxing history, and obviously he's the one who fought Mayweather. Clearly, he's a talented boxer, but whether, clearly, but whether he's good enough to be a proper pro is, you know, debatable. I mean, he could say, like, you know, he did do how many rounds. I don't know, I can't remember how many rounds they did. They have 8 rounds, Mayweather? Was it 8, 10? Did he go 2, 12? I can't remember if it was full 12 rounds, was it?
I think it was even 6 then.
Or whatever it was. Obviously, I didn't watch it, but I saw some highlights. But obviously, going that far with someone like Mayweather clearly shows you've got talent. You know, it's not a case of, like, he's a fucking bum and absolute shit. He's always got some talent, but there is a difference between fighting a 96-year-old Mayweather or however old he is nowadays. And to be honest, the weight difference between the two is unreal, I'm sure. Because obviously Mayweather, was he, what did he fight at, 145 or something? Or
yeah, 135?
Yeah. Yeah, and he's like fucking 200 plus pounds obviously walking around. It's like, there's a big difference there. And, you know, the McGregor-Diaz fight shows you exactly the difference in weight in terms of what how much of a difference that can make. The first, obviously, fight where Conor, I think, hadn't experienced fighting someone as big as Nate Diaz, even though he's obviously a lanky giraffe, as he called him. But obviously, being just so much heavier and bigger in frame and size, just such a big difference in terms of, you know, being able to take a punch and being able to like, punch back and stuff. So it kind of shows you that weight difference is, there's a reason why they have weight categories, because the power difference does have a huge effect. But I think it's going to be different with Woodley. I think
he's a big banger.
He's a big banger. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I mean, he's
pretty heavy.
Yeah, I think again that same podcast Stephen Thompson was talking about when he fought Woodley. He said at that time he'd stopped lifting weights for one reason. I can't remember why. Basically, he decided that he was just going to do bag work and some other stuff for conditioning and wrestling and stuff to kind of maintain strength and mass. And he wasn't going to do any strength and conditioning because I can't remember why they said that. He thought it was being detrimental to him. But he said he changed his mind again when he fought Woodley, just because he said Woodley was just so strong. It was like a different animal. He's like, I need to be stronger because I come across someone like Woodley who's just a fucking gorilla. Like such a big, brute, strong, like muscular man. Yeah, he said, you get well, someone then get their hands on you, realise that actually he's a fucking powerful, powerful person. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see how this boxing match goes. But
I wonder how quick Logan Paul is, whichever Paul is, at avoiding punches. Because if Woodley winds one up and catches him, it's fucking good night. And if he can take a punch like that from Tyron Woodley, it's like, right, fair play, you can take a bang.
Yeah, but it's different when you got like fucking 12-ounce gloves or whatever they wear in those boxing matches. Obviously, it's a big difference than that, and tiny little things over the knuckles, like your pitter patter, really. Don't get me wrong, I'm not saying I want to get smashed by one by any stretch.
I watched there's a video of Tyson's sparring on the bags. It must have been for the Roy Jones fight. It's like, fucking hell.
Yeah.
It's an animal, even at 50. He would destroy.
Yeah.
But if he got in amongst you, he did his classic combo, he would take his head off.
And don't get me wrong, obviously, Roy Jones is obviously as was a fucking beast in his time as well, but you think at their ages, you think, oh, they're still such fuck, like, I mean, they're both in their 50s, mid-50s, yeah, aren't they? You think, fuck me, like, not that you would ever expect to have a chance even, you know, against someone like Mike Tyson. Of course you wouldn't, it's a ridiculous thing to even consider, but you think even as a 25 year old, like, they'd smash most 25 year old decent individuals still, just so tanned. Do you see that Nigel Benn and Chris Eubank have apparently setting something up now? I saw this morning. I saw something about they're trying to do a fight. I mean, they must, I don't know how old they are, but they must be in their 50s as well.
Yeah, gotta be in there. Gotta be.
Lol.
I hope Tyron Woodley just takes his head off.
Yeah, so do I. But like I said, whether he gasses out. The last few fights, though, he did, and obviously I think the fight with Wonderboy Woodley, I think he did kind of sit back and kind of play a bit more counter fighting and a bit less aggressive to kind of maintain his gas tank a bit. So, and I think all the fights since then he's kind of similar. So be interesting if he does kind of just sit back and try and let the other dude kind of expend some energy and just burst and just explode when he wants to and just try and take his head off. So it could be very, very interesting. But thanks for the chat, my friend. Hopefully the listeners enjoyed it. I'm gonna wrap it up there. Stay safe, stay muscular, and you'll be good at old age. Simple as that.
Stay hard.
Stay hard. All right, Goggins. Stay hard! That's what he says, isn't it?
Is that Goggins, is it?
Yeah, Goggins, didn't he say that? He goes,
I knew it was from someone. I can't remember who it was.
I can't remember what else he says, but he goes like something like that, and he goes, stay hard! Fucking madman.
Stay hard, man.
All right, bonjour.
Toulou.
Thank you for listening to the NNN podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please help us by rating on your podcast provider, sharing with your networks so we can get our content out to more people. See you next week.